All right. So we're going to get started. We've got Eli and Katie Giltner with us. Since Katie was here last time, she's got a new last name, a new traveling companion, and a baby on the way. Yep. So that is awesome. And headed back to Japan in
January.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to open with prayer, and then I'm going to turn it over to Eli and Katie, and they'll share with us what the plans are for the future.
Prayers and your love as well. And I just want to say a huge thank you for that right off the bat. Just really appreciate you guys. And coming back here, I see just a number of faces that I recognize from last time. And that's always fun for me. And I just enjoy coming back and seeing the same folks and just getting to know you all a little bit better each time. So anyway, just want to say thank you for your faithfulness here, not only in your giving, but also your missionaries here. So you're our missionaries to this area. So thank you for what you're doing here and being a light for the Lord. And the pastor had asked me just to give a little bit of a short story about how Eli and I met, because some of you might be wondering about that. But we actually met about 10 years ago in college, and we were just talking about it with Ethan this morning. Ethan was in my freshman speech class, so I knew Ethan as well. And but Eli was actually friends with my little sister, because they were both, Eli was a criminal justice major. He'll talk about that more in the video that we'll show in the service. But so my sister was criminal justice as well, and so they had some classes together, and I had some other mutual friends. So we didn't know each other too well, but we went out to lunch in a group a couple of times, I think. And I remember thinking, this guy is a really great guy. And I told my little sister, I was like, he's a great guy. I was like, you should marry him. But they were interested in each other, really. And but I remember thinking, you know, he's a criminal justice major, but he hangs out with all the pastoral guys. Like, I could tell he really just had an interest in serving the Lord even back then. And, you know, after college, he came to my senior show. I was an art major, and he came to my show, and he looked at my artwork and said, wow, you're really talented. And years went by. I was just about to go over to Japan, and he wrote me and said, hey, I'm just have a new office here. He'd just become, a probation officer at the time. And he asked for some artwork for his new office. And I said, you know, I don't have any at the right now to sell. I said, but I can ask my art friends if they have anything. And so I asked my art buddies. I still keep up with a lot of them from my school days. And anyway, they forgot to write me back. Nobody wrote me back about it, so I forgot to write him back. And then I went on to Japan. I had to serve there five years. And Eli was a probation officer 5 years. And somewhere around that time, I started looking at some old correspondence, and I realized, I never wrote this guy back. I just found his note, and I was like, oh, no. So I wrote him back, and I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I forgot to ask you, tell you about the artwork. I never did, get back to you. And he said, oh, no, I found something. He said, but actually, I'm thinking about coming out to Japan for a mission trip. And he said, every time I have some time off of work, I'll go and do a mission trip, help a missionary out someplace. He said, so I'm thinking about Japan next. So he said, if I come out there, he said, can you help me, maybe meet some people, some pastors that I would be able to help or assist while I'm there? And I said, yeah, certainly. So he came out there, and we started talking. And as I was talking, I was thinking, man, this guy sure does resemble my prayer list for my future spouse. And by the fourth day, I was like, everything I've been praying for was checked off. And believe me, it was a long list. And by the time I got to the end, I was like, this is amazing. And by the fourth day, I just knew. I was like, I'm going to marry this guy. I didn't tell him, of course, but so time went on. He was just there for 3 weeks. We had some good conversations, but I had no idea what he was thinking about me. And then I took him to the bus station with a friend so that he could get on the bus and get to the airport to return to America. And I'm thinking, well, there goes my future husband. But it was funny. Right before he got on the bus, he handed me a letter. And I said, oh, what's this? And he said, oh, it's just some of my thoughts of my time while I was here. And I said, okay. And I got home and I read it. And in the letter, he started explaining to me that, the Lord, I already knew the Lord had been calling him in the ministry. I could tell just by the way he was talking. But he told me that while he was there, God had specifically called him to be a missionary to Japan. And not only that, he said, this next part I'm a little freaked out about. I'm not sure if I'm ready to tell you this, he said, but I've had this prayer list for my future spouse since my sophomore year of college, he said, and I've never met anybody that met all the criteria on this list until I met you. And so we knew at that point, this is from God, this is not us. We really identified each other by our prayer list, and which was really neat. And so we started writing letters, and he told me, he said, now I want to get to know you, but not too much until I get permission from your dad. So Eli's from Montana, and Eli flew all the way from Montana down to Tennessee by himself while I was in Japan to meet my parents and get their permission to pursue me for the first time. And so they gave their blessing, and so Eli, he finished up things with his job, and 11 months from the time he left Japan, he came back and started language school, and we were dating mostly on Skype before he got there, and then soon after he got there, he proposed to me, and we were married in October of last year. So we have, like Ethan mentioned, we have a baby on the way that's also due in October, about the time of our wedding anniversary, so, and then we're planning on going back to Japan in January. So that's kind of an introduction of how we met, and now Eli's going to do our presentation here, our slide presentation, and hope you enjoy, and again, just thank you guys so much for what you do here.
That's a hard story to follow up. I don't know if I can do that. But it is true, nonetheless. All right, so our motto for Japan is really what you see up here on the screen, pray for Japan. Now, I was just talking to this gentleman over here, and they were telling me about raising some money to send to Katy for the tsunami that had happened. And that's where the idea for Pray for Japan comes from. In 2011, as many of you know, there was a tsunami, and about 20,000 people were killed by that. And through that situation, many people from the West came to Japan and gave their support and helped them to rebuild and connect with the lots of people there. That region of Japan doesn't have a lot of Christians in it, obviously. So through that, a lot of connections were made for Christianity in that area and in Japan as well. In Japan, normally, people, they don't really travel too far to help each other out, and that's something that we do in America. It seems like when there's hurricanes or earthquakes or something happens, people really get together. There's a lot of church groups and things that get together and they help rebuild and they make things happen. And the Japanese were amazed by that, all the Westerners that had come out and helped them and things like that. So from that, we come up with the concept of pray for Japan. That's our motto. If you remember anything from today, please remember that, to pray for Japan. Why? Why pray for Japan? Is it because of the devastation? Japan is known as a country that is in the Ring of Fire. There's volcanoes, there's earthquakes, there's tsunamis, there's all kinds of things that just happened. As you guys are well aware of, not too long ago, there was an earthquake. There's two or three major earthquakes in a small area of Kumamoto, I think was the name of the city. 40 people died, and there's a lot of devastation there. This country is used to having devastation and disaster being part of the Ring of Fire? Or is it because of the depression that exists? In Japan, people don't really realize, but for the average man that wants to provide for his family that's working, known as a salary man, they're working anywhere from 12 to 16 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week. That is the norm there. If you want to provide for your family as a man, you're going to be working some serious hours. And that's how they provide for their family. That's the expectation. While the wife is expected to stay at home and take care of the children. And imagine if your husband is working 6-7 days a week, 16 hours, 15-16 hours a day, you're not really having much kind of connection with him or relationship. And a lot of times the husband will go out and drink with his friends or hang out afterwards. That kind of connection is fractured. So a lot of the times the women in the house are kind of isolated in that regard, and they have their own kind of separate life. And the other element is the children. A lot of times the children, when they grow up, they'll be in school all the time, and then after school they'll have what's called a cram school. So most of the time a lot of the kids will be in school after school learning things like English or math or college preparation, things like that. So whereas in America, a lot of times, Our kids will have free time to rest and relax, things like that, or they'll have time to go and do sports or, you know, extracurricular activities. In Japan, it's different. They send their kids off to get this kind of cram school. So if you can imagine, these three elements of the family unit, they're all kind of fractured. They all kind of have their own lives. And because of that, there's a lot of depression that exists. There's a lot of mental health problems that exist in Japan. It's not uncommon to have people actually literally work themselves to death in Japan. And that's just something that we don't really hear about in Japan when we're here in America. What about denial? In a lot of ways, people in Japan deal with their problems through things such as in this picture here. This is pachinko. It's like a casino or gambling. So a lot of times people will deal with their problems through denial, through gambling, through joining cults, through getting involved in the sex industry, or different things like that. That's how a lot of the men and people deal with their problems. The women a lot of times will kind of escape into shopping, or there'll be an escapism into, you know, anime and manga and things like that. Just kind of an escape out of the world that they live in. Oops. Or is it because of the ultimate sacrifice, which is, you know, despondency, just kind of losing interest in life and taking your own life? Japan is known in the developed nations as being the nation with the highest rate of suicide per capita. About 30,000 people per year take their own life in that country. That's about the size of maybe this city. Maybe it's 30,000 or so every year is disappearing. So while it's true that these issues exist in Japan today, there's an urgent need in Japan that few people really know about, few Japanese, and that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's our role as God's people to bring the gospel to all nations. That doesn't necessarily mean countries, but people groups within each country. And in America, for instance, in a lot of our big cities, there's people from all around the world. And it's our role to bring the gospel to these people groups. And one of our mottos, of course, as well, is one of the key verses that we go off of is Matthew chapter 28, verse 19 to 20. It says, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all that I have," teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. Our role is to lead people to Christ, but also to disciple them and to teach up the next, raise up the next generation to be able to reproduce and to plant churches as well in the area. Okay, I know about what the Great Commission is, but why Japan? It's a first world country after all. Japan has internet, they have power, they have a relatively stable economy, they have everything that we have here in America. Why waste our time in Japan? Why not just go to a country that's developing, like in Africa or South America, that has some more serious issues? Why go to Japan? Well, Japan is known as a part of countries to Western missionaries. It's known to us as the 1040 window. These countries contain the most concentrated populations of human beings. They have the smallest populations of Christians in the world, the most unreached area of the world. Out of all open countries in the 1040 window, Japan has the lowest percentage of Christians. Estimates show that anywhere from 0.5% to 5% of Japanese are Christian. We get that number because it's closer to 0.5% are what we consider to be born-again Christians. And the 5% number comes from including Jehovah's Witnesses or Catholics, Greek Orthodox, all these other different kind of things branched together. So we believe the number is closer to about 0.5% of Japanese are Christians. That's roughly 635,000 people out of 127 million people. Now, Japan is an open country in which anybody in this room could go and travel there if you wanted to. I say that to say this. It's still, because it's open, and they've had trade since the late 1800s with the West, and have had missionaries and things coming into that country, but yet still the Christian population remains low. Now compare this with a country like Saudi Arabia, for instance, which is considered a closed country. It's difficult to go there. You cannot preach the gospel there. You will be imprisoned or executed or something like that in that country. But yet Saudi Arabia has relatively about the same amount percentage of Christians there in their country as Japan. So that kind of gives you an idea of the difficulties faced to Japan. The land area of Massachusetts is about 14 times smaller than Japan, with a population of close to 6.7 million people. If compared to Japan's Christian percentages, this would mean that about 33,500 people would be considered Christian. So maybe this, I don't know how big North Adams is, but I'm guessing if it's around 30,000 people, that would be, maybe this city here would be all Christian and the rest of the state not Christian. Now we think about Massachusetts is a pretty secular state. There's probably not a lot of Christians as compared to other states. But still, nonetheless, if this was the only Christian population, Massachusetts would be a far different place. Imagine if everyone was opposed to Christianity, and there was no churches in the rest of the state. We would have a different kind of atmosphere here. In comparison to North Adams, with a population of 13,500 people, only about 67 Christians would be available to serve the entire city. So maybe just this one church for the entire city would be Christian. Everyone else opposed to it or not wanting anything to do with it. I don't know, maybe that's accurate. Is that kind of how you guys feel that it is anyway? Yeah, I don't know. But that's kind of an idea of what we can get for Japan. So what can we do as God's people? Romans chapter 10, verse 15 and 16 says, "How shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him in whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things." Japan is a nation that desperately needs missionaries, people to come to it and to bring the gospel. The gospel needs to be transplanted there. The Japanese culture is very different from Western culture and from the biblical culture. In many regards, it is the opposite of that. So that is something that it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of patience. You hear about missionaries that have been in Japan for great periods of time, 20, 30 years, and see maybe, you know, six to 10 people come to Christ in a small church in that atmosphere. It's because of the heavy cultural pressure that exists in Japan to stay away from Christianity. In Japan, it's often thought that if you become a Christian, you're no longer Japanese. And in a society that's very communal and that relies upon each other, to have that stigma can be unbearable for many people. So there is a great challenge to be able to try to find a way for the Japanese to be able to express their faith and to be able to grow as Christians and to lead more people to the Lord. And I think that we're seeing in more recent times, people are getting burned out. They're seeing that their way of life is getting harder and harder to maintain. So that there is an allure, there is an attractiveness to Christianity and to the concept of grace and to the concept of peace and love that they don't really have equals to in their culture. Let's try this. Okay, so what is the plan? Together, Katie and I, with our unique calling as well as the God-given abilities of artwork, evangelism, counseling, discipling, teaching, we plan on returning to Japan to assist local Baptist Japanese churches to do the work of the gospel. Right now we're working with a small Japanese church called Takayama Bible Baptist Church. It has about 100 people. In Japan, that's considered a mega church because the average church is about 30 people. And our goal is to be able to come alongside them and to help them. And there are some young men there that do want to become pastors in the future. So ideally, Lord willing, we would like to come alongside those young men and help them to plant a church. We found through just research and Katie's experience and talking to other missionaries that the best way to do ministry in Japan is to have the local national pastor to be able to set up the church and do the pastoral aspect, and then missionaries come alongside to be able to do the evangelism and to do the discipling and counseling and help teach the people there to do that. Japanese are naturally kind of quiet people. They tend to kind of stick together in their own groups. It's kind of rare for them to reach outside and talk to people that aren't in their immediate circles. So for Westerners, we normally like to come up and talk to random people. It's just part of who we are, especially people in the South. It doesn't bother us. So we in Japan are very open about being missionaries and talking to people and telling them why we're there and inviting them to church and things like that. So that's just something that the Japanese don't understand. To them, it's shocking. So to be able to help them to perhaps be able to reach out and talk to other people to learn what the culture of the Bible is as opposed to Japanese or American culture so that they can reach out to the other people in Japan. And for the most part, we've had a lot of positive reception. People are glad that we're there helping their country. They know that there's problems. They know that they can't maintain this lifestyle. And they know that their population is decreasing and things like that. But also, you know, there's older Japanese people that are more traditional that don't like, you know, missionaries coming to their country. But that's very rare. I don't think really have encountered anything like that. We just hear about it. So, will you join God's work with us in Japan? Pray for Japan. Again, that's our motto. If you remember anything, please pray for Japan. And please commit to pray each day for missions in Japan, and not only in Japan, but for your other missionaries. Each day, or each week, we receive emails from our mission board about different missionaries around the world and their needs and things like that. To be a missionary is very difficult for the families to uproot from their natural, normal culture to go to a different land and face all the difficulties that they face. So prayers make a huge difference for them. There's lots of spiritual attack that they're under, lots of physical ailments that their children and their families have each day. So we do appreciate, we can tell a difference when people are praying for us. There are times when there's just a lot of heaviness spiritually, but we can feel breakthroughs when we ask people to pray for us. So it's very interesting. There's lots of spiritual conflict, especially in a place like Japan. It has kind of a heavy kind of darkness over it. If you can imagine a culture that's 99.5% non-Christian, with temples and statues and idols and things all over the place, you can imagine what the kind of atmosphere, the spiritual atmosphere, would be in that kind of scenario. And here's our contact information. We are the Giltners, you know, Katie and Eli, with Baptist Mission to Forgotten People. And our field is Higashi Kurumi, Tokyo, Japan. And we're there to do the work of the gospel. And there's our contact information. And again, I encourage you guys to sign up. And we can send you out our information, our blog, and our prayer requests. And you guys can come alongside us to do the work of the gospel. And as we're here in America, we do evangelism and things like that as well. So we firmly believe that no matter where you're at, you're supposed to preach the gospel to everybody and to reach out and to do ministry to everybody. I'm from Missoula, Montana, which is like 10-15% Christian and a very secular place, like Massachusetts in a lot of ways. So I remember and I know what it's like to be opposed by every nature of person. But I also know that God can have major breakthroughs, and a lot of people in the community are just waiting for that person to come along and to talk to them and to reach out to them or to listen to them. And that's the kind of ministry that we have in Japan as well. A lot of times people are just curious that we are Westerners, that we're there, what are we doing in their country? And they want to talk to us, and that opens up the door. We just tell them who we are. And a lot of times we can build relations and people will start opening up to us. It's no different here in Massachusetts or in Montana. There are people out there that God is preparing, and there's people out there that we need to talk to and to witness to about our role. Anyway, now I'd just like to open up the floor for you guys. If you have any questions about Japan for Katie or myself, please feel free to ask. Yes, ma'am. Yes, 1040 window is, there's the longitude and the latitude in that picture kind of describes an area that goes all the way from like Morocco to Japan. And then basically we know that Morocco to, like Iran, a lot of those countries are predominantly Muslim, or the countries in Northern Africa maybe have a lot of, maybe a mix of Islam and spiritualism. The next block over would be India, which has a mix of Hindu and Buddhist populations. And then over further east, southeastern Asia, China and Japan are predominantly Confucian and Buddhist type populations, or secular humanism. And all those populations together constitute the areas that have the lowest percentage of Christians in them. But the highest populations of people. There's, you know, 2 or 3 billion, or maybe even 4 billion people live in these areas, but they're predominantly non-Christian. And that is what we call the 1040 window, the area that has the fewest missionaries going in to reach them. In the past, it seems like a lot of missionaries from North America have been sent to South America or Mexico or to Africa. And because of that, we see a lot of fruits today of Christianity growing steadily in those areas. But a lot of the areas like North Africa and you know, the areas I just mentioned are having more difficult times, with the exception of China and India, which are slowly growing. I've heard numbers in China anywhere from like 10% of their population is becoming Christian, so like 100 million out of 1.2 billion people. And interestingly enough, when we were in Japan in language school, we met a lot of Chinese students. And I don't speak Chinese, but YouTube has Chinese Christian videos, so I was able to send them these links and stuff. And actually, one of the guys that we met in language school, Charles, I was able to lead him to the Lord. He was very interested in Christianity. So I sensed in a lot of regards that a lot of Chinese tend to be pretty open, more open to Christianity, because they live under a repressive communist type country, and they are interested in other ways of life. So, and we know some missionaries to China too, and even though they're undergoing a lot of persecution now, there seems to be a lot of growth as well. And the only exception in the 1040 window would be South Korea, it seems. They're like, I think, 30 to 40% Christian, and they actually send missionaries to China and to Japan as well. So that's very good. But a lot of them, I think, tend to be Presbyterian, or there's some kind of charismatic combination there too. So, but nonetheless, we're glad to see that there are missionaries from South Korea going to Japan as well. But at the same time, there's a lot of animosity between South Korea and Japan and China and Japan because of the war history and things like that. So they kind of have conflicts, but we don't have that. Japanese tend to respect Americans more because we came to their country and helped them rebuild, things like that. So, does that answer your question? Okay, yes, ma'am. Sir? Why do we call it the 1040 window? Yeah. I think
it has to do with the latitude and longitude of the Earth, right? Mm-hmm. How it.
Mm-hmm. Sir? I don't think we see any opposition to the government, because it's such a small percentage. It's not really a threat. That might change if it, you know, gets up to like 20-30%. But right now, it's kind of under the radar almost. I mean, they like missionaries coming there and to helping them out.
They do have kind of a strict, I guess, laws about how you can get a missionary visa in Japan. You have to have somebody, organization supporting you there, and somebody who sponsors you there. And you have to have, I think they just changed the laws where you have to have a Bible school degree, and that's happened since I've been over there. So they're getting a little bit more strict. They did have a religious group that actually was in Japan. It went in foreign missionaries, but it was a religious group that was a cult that came in and bombed the subways years back. And
gassed.
They sent off like a gas bomb that killed a lot of people. So after that, they kind of started cracking down more on like how you can get a visa over there. So we do need prayer about our visas going back over there. But once you're in the country, you don't really see, there's not government persecutions, so to speak. It's more, if they feel like you're being held accountable to somebody there, they're pretty lax with you, fortunately. So.
But we do know that Islam is very strictly regulated and watched very closely there.
There's very few Islamic temples or anything. They keep a close eye on Muslims over there.
Tell us about the cost of living.
It's very high. It's just, I guess the rent where we're at, the rent's about par. We spend about $800 for our rent, which is not bad for Tokyo. Of course, as you get further in, it could be twice that easily. But the food is very, very expensive. Just to give you an idea, a watermelon costs $20-$30. If sour cream, I wanted some sour cream one time, and I found like something about a Dixie cup size thing of sour cream for like $6 or something, $5-$6. Yeah. I mean, it's just the food's
certain
very
products
expensive.
Are expensive, but
just things that you go purchase at the store, and there's high taxes too. I don't have a car now where I'm at in Tokyo, but what I had a car before was an older car, but it still costs like $400 or $500 in taxes a year just for, and we don't even have that over here that I know, at least we didn't down south. So you had a lot of just living taxes, that sort of thing. It can be pretty costly.
It'd be kind of close to living in New York City, if you can imagine, just a very high cost of living there, very fast-paced life. Only, you know, I think the difference is in Japan, we just change our diet. The diet mostly there consists of rice, vegetables, and fish, things like that. And those, they can be expensive, but that's the kind of the main products that we get. The things that Katie was mentioning, those are kind of rare. So
yeah.
I think they're not rare, but they're harder to get, so they become more expensive.
Right, so we just basically don't avoid the Western type foods because they do cost more money. Of course, it's an island, and they have to ship a lot of things in, so that would definitely contribute to the cost.
And then just riding the train every day is just the same as anybody here filling up their gas, basically. It kind of is equivalent to that.
We do. Yeah, we have a pretty good teen group over there. And some of those teens, I know a couple of them, one or two of them are wanting to come over here to America to go to seminary to be pastors. So I feel like our teen group's pretty solid. Like, they're really wanting to please the Lord. You know, as hard as it is to witness to their friends in Japan, they, you know, a lot of times when they get in their teen groups, they're like, you know, really pray for me. I really want to tell my friend at school about Jesus. I really want to, you know, so they definitely have a burden. And we actually feel more of, I guess, the Holy Spirit and God really moving in the teen group even more than the adults. It seems like they really have a passion there to really want to make a difference. What's that? What days do you have? They of course, they meet on Sunday, every Sunday, obviously, and they do, we have a Wednesday night prayer meeting, and the teens will participate in the prayer meeting at first, and then they'll go up and have their own group meet a prayer meeting as well, so they'll have all their stuff there. And then they usually do, ever so often, they'll do trips. Like, I've taken trips with the teens to go to camp and stuff like that together, and so they'll have different activities and stuff like that for the teens.
Yes, sorry, did you have another question?
Probably most people do not own a car in Tokyo because nobody be able to move on the street. So most people we bike as well. We bike and we walk and we ride buses and trains. So that's all we do for transport. So I went back, when Eli came, I went back to language school with him to help along and to kind of boost my language up before we got married. And so I rode my bike 15 minutes to the station, got on a train for an hour or so, then walked to the next subway station, rode the subway for a few minutes, and then we walked to class. And unless it was raining, instead of taking my bike, I would take the bus or something. Yeah. So that's kind of typically how we would get around.
During rush hour, early in the morning, on the way inside to Tokyo, everything is completely jammed, and you've probably seen pictures of people being pushed in.
Yeah, they have pushers that push you on the train.
We've experienced being crushed inside.
It could be painful sometimes, like literally, like, you know, because you can't move and everybody's pushing against you, and you, yeah, it's, it can be
so
really
many,
painful.
So many people there that that's one of their main, one of their big problems, that they're always asking people like for new ways to come up with how to deal with their density and how to get people in time and all this kind of stuff. So it's always hard. But the other thing is the only, it seems like the people that are very well off have a car. Just because the car itself is expensive, gas is very expensive,
parking,
all the regulations, and you have to keep it up to date every 3 years or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you can pay hundreds of dollars a year just to park in your own apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, maybe several, maybe a couple hundred a month or something, just to keep that parking spot for you in front of your house or in front of your apartment.
And to travel from place to place. Like, I was thinking that it was, you know, kind of expensive to go through New York City and pay $15 to do the bridge the other day, but I was thinking in Japan, just to travel from like one city to the next or something with the toll roads, it's like $200 or something. It can get outrageously
high. Yeah, from where I used to live in Japan, which was by train about an hour and a half away to Tokyo, hour and a half by train, 3 hours by car. So it was $100 each way. So round trip to Tokyo was $200 at least dollars. And I mean, each toll usually costs like $30 to $50, sometimes $60 per toll. So when you put $1.50 in, just be grateful that it's not $50. That's usually what the people don't travel a lot by car through the country. Usually take trains and that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we better end our questions. I think our time is up. So, well, you can ask me some more questions in the back if you'd like. But let's close with a word of prayer. All right. Dear God, thank you for bringing us here today to Mount Greylock Baptist Church and meeting all these people. And God, thank you for their prayer support and their concern about Japan. God, and I pray that you would bless this church and guide and direct each person here today. God, I pray you'd open our hearts to hear the message of the word today that's going to be preached. Also, I pray that your spirit would be upon the pastor, and God, that we'd be able to be convicted and apply the word to ourselves. God, I pray for each person in here as well, God, to be aware of their own role in spreading the gospel to their local area, God, and being missionaries to this area, God. I pray you give each of us the courage and the strength to be able to step outside of our comfort zone and to witness to other people and to show them that we do care for them, we do love them, and that we want to see our people, our community, or our nation changed. God, we love you. We thank you for this time. We ask these things in the name of Christ. Amen.